it's not that hard to see just why a lot of these tech companies are starting to have amazing results in terms of their share price, because you can kind of piece together the logic that, yeah, wow, this is revolutionary technology that when applied to traditional business models can really amplify what's going on. And so, yeah, I think anything that can help people to get their heads around it, giddy up, it's good.
The New Zealand Tech Podcast, brought to you by Guerrilla Technology, proactive and strategic IT.
Greetings and welcome along to the New Zealand Tech Podcast. I'm your host, Paul Spain. Today, we're with Darcy Ungaro from the New Zealand Everyday Investor Podcast. Welcome along, Darcy. How are you?
Hey, thanks for having me, Paul. I'm good. Thank you very much.
Fantastic. Now, for those that aren't familiar, where you fit into this big wide world of media, tech, investment, business, a little intro on yourself.
Sure. Yeah. Like I'm at the very top of the pinnacle, right? Of technology and media and podcasting and investing. So where I fit in the world? Well, about 5 or 6 years ago, I guess you were kind enough to give me an introduction into the podcasting world. Before that, I was just kind of world famous all by myself, and my mother-in-law was my only fan. Now I've got my mother-in-law and like at least half a million people. It's fantastic. So I'm a financial advisor, and I help people into and out of their properties. I help people get set up with a really good KiwiSaver plan. I help people get a financial strategy in place. So I don't just sell products. I basically sell my time and answer questions. So that's the day job. And then I guess the night job or my hobby is host of the Everyday Investor Podcast, where we cover things from mainstream investing all the way to the alternatives, or I guess what I like to call probably the way of the future. So that's kind of what I do. And yeah, I'm loving it.
Yep. Well, looking forward to chatting to you about the tech news of the week. And we also have an episode where we're going to delve into the investment world and particularly the tech-enabled sort of aspects of that, talking AI, talking, you know, blockchain type investments and so on. So looking forward to delving into that as well. But first up, let's say a big thank you to our show partners, to 1NZ, Spark NZ, 2 Degrees, HP and Guerrilla Technology. We appreciate their support for the New Zealand Tech Podcast. And let's jump into the New Zealand news. There's a fair bit, you know, going on at the moment. One of the things that jumped out to me was a bit of a leap year software glitch that took out the ability to pay at petrol pumps around the country. So what seems to have been the case is those petrol pumps that were using the Invenco point of sale software, basically there was some sort of bug there, and that stopped people being able to do their transactions on the 29th of February. So a few lessons there when it comes to dealing with these sorts of things. I saw a quote from the Gull spokesperson Julian Lees, and that was interesting. They were just saying, oh, just one of those things that's caused payment software to have a glitch in terms of referring to February 29th. But the register put it this way. This is why developers use tried and tested libraries that have been around for decades and don't typically dare to touch anything concerning calendar time logic themselves, lest they be fast-tracked to insanity. So there probably would have been a few people feeling like they were going a bit insane on Feb 29th when, you know, I don't know what the, you know, amount of transactions were that that failed, but, you know, could easily be millions of dollars worth of transactions, you know, due to this sort of issue. So, yep, some good lessons there for folks in the tech world.
What does fast track to insanity mean, though? Like, isn't that just part of being human? We're all fast track to insanity.
Well, some more than others, Darcy. And times one might wonder whether being involved in technology is a way to get fast tracked even faster. But you know, now other things sort of happening locally. We've got Amazon or AWS who have been working on their opening their data centers and having a local region here in Auckland, and we've got an episode coming up where we will be speaking with AWS around some of the latest happenings. Yeah, it's been reported that their building, one of their buildings in Auckland, is held up due to some issues with their stormwater design, and this has impacted their ability to move things ahead. So you know, they have to comply with an integrated catchment management plan for Totara Creek, where they're based, and so their resource consent application was paused, and this is now going back around 6 months. So yeah, probably not helpful for them for getting launched here. In chatting with them, you know, they're certainly still you know, still going ahead, but there's a bit of a delay in there. So no doubt there will be a point we'll hear some you know, some more details on that launch. Of course, Microsoft, you know, also working on their hyperscale cloud infrastructure launch in New Zealand as well. So I guess to a degree, some of these things are part and parcel of having infrastructure, as you do have these physical things that are really important to get right. And that's always the balancing act when it comes to environmental impacts, that there's work to do. Some you can get right up front, some has to be adjusted later. Now, we have heard, and I'm curious for your thoughts on this one, Darcy, tech billionaire Peter Thiel, who, as many of us know, is a New Zealand citizen, though he doesn't reside here or intend to really spend a whole lot of time here at any committed point. But he's been given the New Zealand equivalent of a better than a green card, I suppose, is full citizen. And he's been working on his new lodge, or he's got a team that have been working on that down in Wanaka, and this has attracted a bit of news because there continues to be some you know, some pushback on what he's building. But yeah, it looks like a pretty massive investment, and I guess that's what being successful in the tech world can do for you. And yeah, he's building this amazing sort of, I don't know if bunker's the right terminology when you look at what he's building. The land that he bought, I think it was something like $13.5 million some 9 years ago in Dampa Bay that he's acquired. But talking about the size and scale of one part, they were talking, trying to find the numbers here, the building being 190 meters long and up to 9.6 meters high, and they're trying to hide it from the landscape. So yeah, quite fascinating. But when you've got almost unlimited money and you've had incredible success in the tech world, it gives you that opportunity. On the flip side, what we've got is some locals, some local organizations down there who are, you know, appealing to the district council to, you know, to stop the development. That's the Upper Clutha Environmental Society and the Longview Environmental Trust. So they're opposing it based on the visibility of the lodge from the nearby trail and Lake Wanaka. As an investment man, what do you think? Have you got some thoughts on how we should treat our offshore-based billionaires, Darcy?
Do you know Peter? I got to be careful with what I say just in case I'm ruining a friendship here.
Oh, I couldn't possibly comment, Darcy.
I think it just says something, right? Like when some people become obscenely wealthy, they get more involved in things outside and upwards and just other focused. Whereas other people, when they get extremely wealthy, they kind of go, well, literally they go underground, you know, they retreat and they want to get closer to the center of the earth, right? Closer towards the center of gravity. It seems to be, it's just an interesting kind of, I don't know, money amplifies who you already are, right? Like if you were a little bit of a rough around the edges sort of fella, let's put it kindly, then more money seems to make you more of that type of person. And I've seen a lot of people in business that seem to get away with being that guy, being that abrasive personality, or taking shortcuts and not treating other people with respect. And it seems to work to a certain point. But you do wonder when it kind of all comes back on them and it kind of bites them. And I think, so I think money makes you more of who you already are. That would be one thing I'd say. The other thing is, I know you've traveled a little bit as well, but when you travel around New Zealand in particular, it's quite interesting because there's pockets of areas which are fairly remote, really beautiful, picturesque areas, and you kind of feel like there's just nobody around. And then all of a sudden you just drive by this gate, which has, you know, there's security cameras everywhere, and you can tell well manicured right in the middle of nowhere where there's gorse on the left-hand side and there's a beautiful paved driveway with marble on the right with gates. And you know what's going on, right? Like the rest of the world looks at New Zealand as the most beautiful place on earth, yet the locals don't. And this is evidence of that, that those with means will buy a piece of New Zealand and they will make it their little place where they can hunker down and seek protection from the crazy wide world. Yet Kiwis are trying to get out of here. And I think that's fascinating because I've lived here since 86 and it's just continual. It's this continual thing. Like when I first came here, it was like, why would you ever want to be in New Zealand? Yet when you travel around the world or you come from a different perspective, you just realize just how special this place is. And yeah, acknowledge it's not easy sometimes, but where would you rather be in the world that we're going, right? So I think these tech millionaires, all they're doing is they're exercising their options and they're making a rational choice. I wouldn't necessarily go underground. Well, yes, I would actually, but not that deep. But yeah, they're just being rational, I think.
There you go. All right. Just being rational. There you go. Yeah. That's the summary of Darcy's thoughts on this one. Also from a local perspective, Spark are bringing an AI program to New Zealand businesses that looks really, really interesting. AI for Business Mini MBA was one of the references in what Spark sent across. And it's called an opportunity for Aotearoa businesses to build AI skills and to try and establish a competitive advantage through a four-week program. So they're offering 150 sponsored places for their own Spark customers and other New Zealand business leaders who will gain access to international AI experts through a collaboration with Section, which is an education platform founded by NYU Stern Professor Scott Galloway. Really interesting. It's great to see these sorts of things going on, this sort of investment to support Kiwis. I would imagine, you know, there could be some really good stuff to come out of this. So yeah, we'll follow with interest for sure. But good on them for this investment and, you know, sponsoring a bunch of people who want to get involved. So we're really seeing this this big move on the AI front. But you know, often folks sort of get stuck with how do we get started? What do we do? So to me, this looks really, really interesting.
Yeah, as well, it's technology, isn't it? Anything where there's any sort of input from Scott Galloway, I saw a presentation from him recently. Like I think it was a TED Talk. That guy's amazing. Just how he can clearly articulate the future in a very matter of fact way. Yeah. But I guess with the thing with AI is that it's probably just like any kind of technology to a certain extent. It's just a different variation of technology, a different flavor of it. Mm. And I guess everybody individually and as a small business and a larger business is trying to integrate this tool into how they do things to get efficiencies. And I think that we can kind of all be working on this ourselves, like be curious, play around with it ourselves. I know I've kind of done that a little bit myself, but then using it to create almost like a production line where you do your job better or you innovate better and you kind of reduce your costs in the process. It's not that hard to see just why a lot of these tech companies are starting to have amazing results in terms of their share price, because you can kind of piece together the logic that, yeah, wow, this is revolutionary technology that when applied to traditional business models can really amplify what's going on. And so it makes sense at so many levels that when you implement this, it's good. So yeah, I think anything that can help people to get their heads around it, giddy up, it's good.
Yeah. Yep. And yeah, we can make New Zealand more competitive on the global stage, then all the better too, right? Totally. There's been a bit in the media and varying places around, and now we look a little bit internationally. Gemini AI, which is Google's bits and pieces. So if you haven't caught any of that, then go and have a look. And whether this is sort of images where people are asking for images of certain people in history, and it's come back with variations on those people that are different races, or whether it's some of the content and somebody asks for certain things and the results are have been quite tilted in a particular direction, shall we say. But I think that there's a reality here that that we have to understand. And look, that's that technology and output from AI is always going to have outside influences, and that's going to come from where the rules are given to it, but also the content that it draws from across the internet. So anyone sort of expecting AI to to be perfect, well, often that's in the eye of the beholder, right? What someone believes is the truth, somebody else believes is a lie, often that is based on sort of political considerations and other things. Darcy, do you think we need versions of the AI tools where you choose your particular leanings and it gives you a result that sort of aligns with your view of the world, your political bias and so on? Is is that the answer?
I don't know if that's the answer or not, but it's a fascinating one. Like I was trying to create an image, and I can't remember the name of the tool I was using, but I was trying to create an image to reflect that it was a really scary scenario. And so I put a prompt in. I said who I was, white, middle-aged male, create a picture of me.
Oh, you would have been canceled right there, Darcy.
I know. You wouldn't have got any. I already broke a few rules just being that. But I said, create an image of me hiding in the corner, huddled up in a fetal position, sucking my thumb, something like that. Yeah. A good innocent request, right? Yeah, and it came back, and I was this, I think I was an African American in that one, and I kept on trying, and I was anything but a white person. I said, why can't you make me a white male? And in the end, long story short, it called me racist, and it said this conversation is over, or something like that. It was a rather curt ending to the conversation. I don't know, though, if the answer is to have different flavors. Like with Grok on X, you can select fun mode, which it's just a bit goofy. I wouldn't call it fun. You can kind of get around it with the prompts that you give it just by saying who you are and the perspective that you want.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I think it says something about the operating system that the world has. Like the world has different operating systems. And I guess if you want to put this woke label on it, that's a pretty good name to describe the operating system that's probably flavoring a lot of corporate content that goes out there because it's safe, I guess you could say. But if you're feeding it garbage to a certain extent, it's going to give you a garbage result. If you're feeding it a bias input, it's going to give you all sorts of warped results. And so I don't know what the solution to that is. Like, how do you go to the source of truth when you're feeding it through biased creatures to begin with? I don't know. What would be the answer?
People are going to have different opinions, different inputs. I remember you did a couple of episodes on your podcast of Ask Me Anything AI. Oh, yeah. And, in one case you were trained AI in a particular, in a particular direction. Maybe you're given it New Zealand Herald articles or something. I can't remember the specifics, but you'd fed it a particular data and you got a particular sort of response back. Yeah. And then, another one that had, was drawing on a different set of data and you got a different response. And then, And then after that, you jumped in and shared your, you know, your own thoughts. And, you know, that sort of thing is a good way to, you know, demonstrate in many ways how technology can work, and that we can control and sort of shape the results we get. Of course, if platforms do that too much, then those that are trying to use the platform then, you know, become constrained. So I guess that's, you know, that's the challenge. Do you allow the platform to kind of lock themselves, you know, down to that sort of degree, or do you just draw on what's, you know, generally available and not kind of, you know, blocked content in terms of what's broadly available on the internet in varying ways, and then, you know, people can sort of steer in a direction from there.
Do you feel like, though, that maybe like the natural progression of how these platforms work is that they're not necessarily these centralized platforms where we go to and then we use it for some sort of thing, but it's more something that we can download and customize on our own end, so much so that we could feed it the selected data. Like when I was doing those podcasts, I was basically, yeah, you're right, I was effectively feeding it Mary Holmes articles and that style of financial advice, and then asking it a question, right? But wouldn't it be cool if you in the area of your specialty, or me in the area of my specialty, could train our own AI agents on our own unique stuff? And then that's the model.
Absolutely can. And that is something that you can do right now. Even tools like Microsoft Copilot, this is a long name, Microsoft Copilot for Microsoft 365. You know, with that, it's accessing your data in SharePoint, and you can ask it a question across all of your documents and so on. Or you can
Does that work now, though?
That's available now, yeah.
Yeah.
And that will draw data out of your existing, and that's effectively what you're training the AI on. So then you can ask it questions or say, you know, based on our information, our findings and documentation, write me this or that recommendation.
Have you played around with that, Paul?
A little bit. I guess I've got a few ideas in my mind of where, you know, I'd like to see my company go on some of these things. So, you know, we're laying some foundations for that, and experimenting in different ways. You know, the potential for using AI within businesses, it's absolutely phenomenal. But it's these kind of oddities and risks and challenges that also we have to take into account. I think there was the example we were talking of in the last few weeks around, might have been Air Canada, actually, your old national carrier there, Darcy.
They're the ones that dropped me off here.
Okay, they dropped you off, wouldn't take you home. But they had an AI chatbot that was doing customer service, and it gave, you know, incorrect advice to somebody, and then the court put it on Air Canada to up and pay for their mistake, at least to some degree. There's a lot going on here, and it's important that we get up with the play. It's important that we're experimenting with the technology, that we get to understand it, so, you know, we can minimize the problems and get to where those benefits are. And if we get that right, if we move fast enough, if we move at a faster pace to other countries, you know, this gives New Zealand you know, that leg up, you know, on a global basis to be moving ahead at a faster speed, which obviously benefits Kiwis, disadvantages the rest of the world if you want to look at it from a globalist perspective. But I think generally there's good outcomes from, you know, smart and appropriate use of AI.
Well, do you think that's the competitive advantage then, is to be bold enough to apply AI differently? Because obviously, just like anything else in a global community, you can't think of something that somebody else hasn't already thought of effectively, right? So how would New Zealand, for example, use AI as in its tool belt, as a something that gives it its competitive edge?
I think it's obviously in a place, you know, right now where it's really exciting, where I think there is growing understanding of the benefits it can you know, provide, you know, compared to other technologies, and in some cases it's quite significant. So yeah, the opportunities there for us are significant if we can if we can get these things right. Of course, how do you judge whether you've got it right or not, and whether you've used it in unique and innovative ways. But, you know, I think we'd certainly look back historically, you know, Kiwis have that sort of what we used to call, or sometimes still call, the Kiwi ingenuity. You know, we've got that that creative ability. You know, there are some things around, you know, how New Zealand is, where we are, and our, you know, population scale and people that means, you know, I think we do have some good opportunities. So yeah, let's get cracking. Let's get moving on these things. So, you know, again, looking at Spark's announcement and things that other companies are doing, you know, I'm really, you know, keen to see what the outputs are and what the results are. Now, interesting article in terms of in the local media recently. This was what Stuff published, was the title of "Leaked Files from Chinese Firm Show Vast International Hacking Effort." And it delved into some of the, you know, Chinese sort of state linked or state sponsored, you know, hacking and so on. You know, this was a particular example looking at data that I think files that had come from GitHub. But we just don't see many of these sorts of news stories, you know, hitting the mainstream media. And yeah, just why I thought, you know, it's important that we keep our eyes open. And often these things are in much more kind of niche media outlets that cover them. But, you know, once they do get picked up and recognized and publicized, I think they provide pretty important insights and you know, highlights the important, A, for organizations to be very, you know, very careful from a cybersecurity and a data privacy perspective, but to understand that there is a difference between what goes on in some of the regimes around the world compared to what might happen within, say, you know, New Zealand and other democratic countries. And I'm not saying what we do and what America do is always perfect. But, you know, far from it. But I think there's a level here on this sort of cybercrime that is quite shocking once you delve into some of the realities. And I guess when you look at the laws in some countries versus others, you see it's very much tilted in a direction that is not necessarily about treating others well. Put it that way.
So I'm curious about this. Like, can you just share me some of your insights being in the tech world? Like, I would think about hacking as just these mysterious shadowy super coders in the bottom of mom's basement doing all these evil conniving things, but we're talking about nation states now sponsoring or initiating or organizing these efforts, aren't we? And so, like, from your perspective, at what stage is it beyond the realms of just good IT security protocols, and it's actually more, hey, this is something that our own country should actually be way more active in? Do you think, like, New Zealand, for example, is actually proactive enough in this space, or are they just kind of leaving it up to the businesses to kind of small to medium sized enterprises sort of sort it out themselves?
Yeah, great question. Look, I think it's really hard to get this sort of stuff right. How much do you get the government to do and to invest in, especially as a small country with a small, you know, economy? You know, these things are challenging in terms of what New Zealand has traditionally invested when it comes to you know, cybercrime type things and protection. Yeah, I think that there's probably a reasonably broad feeling, you know, within the cybersecurity space that we could, you know, we could do a lot more. We can invest a lot more. But look, there's always, you know, so many pressures on a government. Do we put money into health? Do we put it into, you know, schools? Do we put it into, you know, military and peacekeeping, you know, type things and roads and so it's a very, very hard, you know, it's a very hard ask, because you'll never please everybody with these things. And it's really hard to predict what will be the impact if our investment is too low today. How will that play out over the next 5, 10, 20, 30 years? Now, if we get it sort of significantly wrong, all our best IP and our best inventions could end up in the hands of a foreign power, and that would leave us, you know, potentially as a very, very poor state. But, you know, you flip it too far in the other direction, and you're always looking over your back, and you don't create anything, and nothing happens either. And you spend all your money, so you can't invest back into education and health and so on. Now, I'm not saying that our cyber investments are at those sort of extreme levels, but it is always that that balance. And look, I think the approach to continually growing government investment on this front is really helpful. So
No, I think China is directly and indirectly our biggest trading partner. So no doubt there's some degree of a conflict of interest higher up in the political realms as well. And so I think that's something that at the very least people like you and me should be making a little bit of noise about. So, because I'm not sure if, but good on your stuff for kind of talking about that. But I think we need to see a little bit more investigative journalism in that space. Probably wouldn't hurt.
Yeah, and in Australia we see a minister for cybersecurity as well. So that's something that New Zealand hasn't got. There's not a formal role for that, but it, you know, obviously it does sit under other things. I do wonder, you know, about that, whether we've got to create, you know, more portfolios that are somewhat more sort of tech aligned, and you know, cybersecurity would make sense to me as a portfolio in some regards, but you know, also get the challenges of having, you know, dozens and dozens of portfolios you know, cabinet ministers and so on. So that there's, you know, we've only got so many people in parliament to sort of spread these things around with, you know, and you often end up with a small number of people with all sorts of, you know, portfolio. So, you know, you wonder how that plays out.
I think it's more of a defense thing. We've got the Navy, Air Force, Land, Army, digital cyber space, right? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Anyway.
So, yeah, just a little word in there for government officials and ministers and so on listening in or not.
Or the Chinese government.
Yeah, the Chinese government, get in while you can. No, I'm not going to encourage. Right, where were we? Little bit of news on the Apple front. I guess one that we've heard sort of bubbling away over, you know, quite a period of years has been that, you know, we've understood that Apple have been, you know, working away on, you know, I guess sort of semi-secret plans to develop autonomous electric vehicles. And, you know, rumors sort of suggested, you know, investment in the sort of $10 billion range or more potentially there, which is, you know, it's been quite fascinating to follow. But we're told that those plans have come to an end, and that nothing is proceeding. And in fact, that those that were involved in this effort have been laid off, although those roles have been stopped. So there have been varying, you know, bits and pieces of coverage over time on this. But yeah, really interesting to see it come to an end. And I think there's probably all sorts of conclusions that you might come to around, you know, just how hard developing this type of technology is and the challenges of you know, getting into the market. And yeah, how hard it would be to compete against, you know, some very innovative Chinese firms such as BYD, Build Your Dreams, and of course Tesla, and then the rest of the auto market, you know, the traditional players that have generally been struggling with their EV sales. So, you know, the future looks very Chinese on one hand, and Tesla on the other hand, in terms of the, you know, the dominance from a tech and innovation standpoint. It doesn't mean the others aren't selling vehicles, although, you know, the numbers, you know, are pretty challenging. And, you know, if you look across the companies, yeah, the stats in a lot of cases look pretty rough. And, you know, even Tesla, their share price hasn't really done, you know, too much over the last 2 or 3 years. So, yeah, I thought that was fascinating. That's something that's been on your radar? Been one of the biggest stocks, hasn't it, from an investor interest perspective over the last, you know, three or four years?
Yeah, and I think probably similar to what we're seeing with Bitcoin right now, when the price of Tesla really, really started going nuts a couple of years back, People start kicking themselves thinking that they missed the opportunity without realizing that, you know, like with any emerging technology, there's always tremendous volatility and there's always usually another opportunity to get on, usually when we have more information as well. So the investment actually becomes safer and there becomes another hop-on point later on in the future. But what's happening right now, I think, that I've been watching in the EV space and probably, I guess, in the vehicle space combined is this general trend, and I think it's kind of getting caught up in this anti-woke movement that seems to be growing as well, this general trend to kind of push back against EVs and this suspicion or this paranoia that there's some sort of cunning evil plot to take away petrol from our engines, right? And just make everybody drive EVs and we'll own nothing and be happy and eat crickets. And I think that unfortunately, that's kind of almost pushing back on EV sales. And you're an EV driver, so am I. I think they're the best thing ever, not necessarily for the environment, but just from a performance point of view. And you don't have an issue on February 29th trying to refuel your Tesla, right? It's just you just plug it in and it works. So I think ultimately the technology is great, and it's a shame to see that there's a bit of a pushback. So I wonder if Apple is kind of seeing that and they're thinking, no, this $10 billion investment isn't a good idea, which is mind-blowing. There's a bit of that, but then there's also a general economic slowdown, which appears to be happening globally. And the first thing that's going to be cut off that list is discretionary purchases, big ticket items like vehicles, which we've all been going on a binge on in the last few years. So that's come to an end. And so I just wonder if maybe that convergence of those two things, an economic slowdown and this general distaste of lithium in the mouth, maybe that's kind of leading to it. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. That's really, really good. Good thoughts there, Darcy.
Thank you very much. I try.
We probably could delve deeply, deeply into the subject, but we won't this time around, because yeah, I can think of a whole lot of different directions there, but you know, of course we've talked about the AI autonomous driving side as well. And clearly this wasn't looking as easy for Apple for them to have exited. Also on the Apple front, just news has come in, you know, today prior to recording around Apple announcing their new M3 MacBook Airs, two variants, the 13-inch and 15-inch. Probably the most obvious sort of difference now is that these M3 based MacBook Airs are now supporting two external monitors. So it was always head scratching to me that Apple was releasing MacBooks that didn't support multiple monitors, even though for me I'm usually docking to a single large sort of 49-inch ultra widescreen. So it's kind of like, well, that works, but if you wanted to do the same with two monitors, which is traditionally a lot cheaper, then sorry. But they've addressed that, which is good. And look, the thing that stands out for me about the M1, the M2, the M3, MacBooks has been that impressive, not just the performance, from a processing perspective, but the impressive battery performance. And I'll go into a meeting sometimes with a colleague, and if they're on Windows and I'm using my the MacBook, guarantee I'm gonna get, it doesn't matter what Windows machine they've got, I'm gonna get at least twice the battery life. So it's pretty outstanding. So Apple are highlighting that the MacBook Air is now the top laptop in the world. I don't know, I didn't delve in deep into how long that they claim that's been the case for and so on. It would stack up. That's probably the point they've got to. So well done, Apple. And I know it was a few years ago. I was picking on Apple a little bit for how slow they were to release iterations of some of the Mac products, but they've broadly stepped that up and are delivering some incredibly superb product into the market now. So it's still waiting on Microsoft to get there with a good ARM-based Windows device and the software kind of working well, although that's been iterated on in the background in recent years. You've been tempted to move to Mac there, Darcy?
Not at all. My wife is inflicted with the MacBook, and I just stand back and just look at all the issues that she has trying to figure it out, how to plug it into a PC world for all the other applications that she wants to run. And I don't know. I can't get my head around it. It's like, I don't know. You know how there's always two groups of people, right? And I just happen to be in that group, not that group. I can't do it.
I mean, I definitely try and, use a range of, range of technology, but you know, that battery life thing has put me out of kilter in terms of, can't say I'm a 50-50 balance between Windows and Mac use, for the last couple of years. So, and that's largely because of just how battery efficient they are, and you get very used to that very quickly. So
and that's all down to the actual processing, right? Like the chips they're using.
Yeah, because that's their own silicon, and that was a very canny acquisition that they did, going back how many years it is now, acquiring a firm that was designing and building their own chips. And it would be very interesting to look back on. I think the acquisition was, this is just off the top of my head, in the, hundreds of millions of US dollars at the time. And it was, it actually be curious to see what we said with the acquisition. But I don't think anybody could have joined up the dots to, how many times their return would be on that investment. Every iPhone, today, which is such a large percentage of their revenue based on those chips that they design, but it's right across the board, including with their spatial computing tech. So well, that brings us to the end of this episode. So thanks everyone for joining us on the New Zealand Tech Podcast. Thank you, Darcy. Great to have you on the show, and of course thank you to our show partners, Gorilla Technology, HP, Spark, 2Degrees, and 1NZ. Darcy, where do people go if they're kind of curious and thinking, oh, there's kind of a techie futurist investment advisor out there. This is what we need. Where would they go to find you? And where do they find the podcast?
Yeah, just look for the white middle-aged male crying in a corner, sucking his thumb, who looks like an African-American, of course. But no, look on Spotify. Look on YouTube, The Everyday Investor with Darcy Ungaro. Twitter, Ungaro Darcy is my name. And be glad to see you there.
Excellent. All right. Well, thanks, everyone. We'll catch you on the next episode. See ya.
The New Zealand Tech Podcast, brought to you by Gorilla Technology, proactive and strategic IT.